Why did you say alleged Venetian contact?
Well, John, when you're out in public like this with your hair down,
I know what Miss Brady and I always, in public utterances, by the way, have said this. But we have never asked anyone to believe. We're doing what we're told to do. We're receiving what information we get. My tape recorders don't lie. And what are you going to do with the information, for example? My Venusians say that they lead these kind of lives. They have a temperate climate. They've described the contrasting climates between the valleys as reaching our freezing and our hot summer weather and so forth. So,
Bob, what is amazing about having all of these tape recordings?
I must have 5,000 hours of tape downstairs myself.
But it's not.
It's not the recordings of the voice from a Venusian. The fact that Miss Brady appears to go into a trance, and that during the time she's in this trance state,
that a voice comes from her body, does not necessarily mean that it's the voice of a Venusian.
It can be just Miss Brady's voice. John, you're asking me to fire more than one stage of a rocket here. Generally speaking, I've explained that there are many stages to a rocket. There are three stages. And generally, when it's necessary to discuss flying saucers by themselves, we fire just one stage. The questions tonight mostly have evolved around the flying saucers, let us say, and we've gotten into stage two a little bit.
That who are the people flying the flying saucers? And that would be stage three.
Now, Miss Brady has demonstrable psychic ability. I have consulted the Parapsychology Foundation here in New York.
I have written letters to J.B. Rhine's Parapsychology Laboratory at Duke University.
And I will probably be in Duke University Wednesday. And I would like very much the opportunity of speaking with Mr. Rhine, because you see,
what I would like to know, you've made a statement that you've been writing letters to Rhine.
All right. Has he answered your letters? That I have no knowledge on whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. I love this. This is a beautiful one.
You can carry out from that, right? Did you hear me?
That's a beauty. Incidentally, Sam Vandervoort is with us.
Well-known photographer,
kind enough to stop in. Sam used to come in often. He'd sit around and talk with us. But his new studio, and because of the tremendous amount of work that is coming,
and certainly Sam is entitled to, he does a great job, but he just hasn't had the opportunity of joining us lately. Very happy to him in the story. Sam is the young photographer who took all the pictures that appeared in Argosy magazine in the April edition of this year in conjunction with the story.
John, you were asking me about the tape. And so what's possible there will be?
Go ahead. All right. What is it, Bob?
John, you were comparing your $5,000 of tape with
what probable value behind that? $5,000. I didn't say what value.
I don't doubt that you have hundreds of hours of tape with voices on it.
But how does this prove, because you have a voice on a tape, that it's the voice of a Venusian?
John, the thing was this, that
I started to tell you all about the various ramifications of our work.
To a recording company here in New York, this afternoon I delivered four tape recordings.
I personally
can't explain them. I doubt if anyone can do a good job all in one man.
I've taken them to the heads of various universities.
These tape recordings are in ancient Hebrew, Aramaic, Arabic, Hindu, and Persian. They're the most beautiful songs that anyone ever heard. This company is considering releasing them for long play records.
I can't explain it. I can't explain the melody in person. But it is very beautiful.
Some of them are by little Venusian girls singing in their song about their valleys, their hills, and so forth. Aside from that,
We have tape recordings which go into completely different things than the flying saucers. And we have, for example,
well, it's part of the fact.
I like them very much, so do others that have heard them. Of, for example, Mr. Mahatma Gandhi.
Just I know Ellery just moved back about 40 feet.
Well,
this has told to me before. I mean, we've heard that there's been tapes from Abraham Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
And can you give us a couple of other names? I have never heard these.
Yes, we have some Einstein tapes. We have a couple, but unfortunately, I think one night it was the tape recorder's fault. It got into a bad situation with the tape. And the second was the fact that Mr. Einstein's personality was not coming through correctly. He has figured out how it was that he can teach telephone. And Mahatma Gandhi has only recently been developing that as perfectly as he should.
Are these tapes in the true voice? Are these taken out of the device of the medium receiving the voice?
Well, naturally, your second question is perfectly true. It has to be Miss Brady's voice. Deduct a little fraction for the female vocal cords involved, and you have the actual voice of the person. For example, Mahatma Gandhi speaks with a sad, anguished voice, speaking with his syllables coming out as though he had the teeth, as I picture him. Speaking, the forces of Armageddon are again upon you and so forth. Your earth is sorely troubled. My India.
Bob, I am lost in the wilderness. I am deep in the
underground. Before you get lost, let me remind you that this is WOR Radio, your station in New York, and this is Long John with the party line. I could just imagine people listening to the party line for the first time, and they're driving along, and they've, you know, they've turned that dial a couple of times. They've been listening to a little music, and one particular number they were listening to they didn't enjoy, so somebody in the family said, you know, go ahead, switch the dial again, try to get some other station. And all of a sudden they heard somebody talking. And they hear some people talking about going to Venus and the Mars and about 385 pounds. Oh, this is enough to flip anybody on the highway. Well, we're talking this morning with Bob Ewing. That's spelled E-W-I-N-G of Edgewater, Florida. Mr. Ewing claims that he represents the planet Venus. Ellery Lanier is with us. Mr. Lanier is the fact editor of Fantastic Science Fiction. And we're very happy to have Lillian Lanier with us. She's been sitting on the sidelines for a while. And during the last couple of minutes, she's been doing a couple of double-up flips here, making notes and so forth and so on. And, Lil, evidently you have a question, something that's a little puzzling.
Yes, I was puzzled about the voice transmission from historical personalities that your medium seems to get. The personalities that you have mentioned so far speak English, I would gather.
Both that and their native language, yes. Mr. Gandhi lapses into Hindu.
Your medium then transmits Hindu?
Oh, yes. In Lawrence of Arabia, I have asked him very definitely to give me a passage of Arabian because I'm looking forward to the day that I will be able to get translators on all of this.
We've got a couple of translators handy if you...
Oh, well,
do you have any tapes?
Not in my position in New York City, no. I have it near.
And I want to say this, pardon me, in all fairness to Bob Ewing, this happens quite often on the party line. You'll say to a man, have you got the tape? And he says, no, I haven't got it with me, or I can't divulge it. But Bob, the last time in October, had, I think, about 8 or 9 reels of tape out in Carteret, New Jersey. Now, this does not necessarily prove that the tape, that the messages on the tape were from Venusian. But Bob had the tapes with him. And Bob had no idea that he was going to be on the program. Actually, he's visiting some relatives in Olean, New York, and I heard about it. And I called him on the phone about 4 or 5 days ago,
And he said, John, I don't think I'll be able to make it because I have to fly back to Edgewater, Florida for the Decoration Day weekend. And I said, Bob, I would appreciate it very much if you could postpone your flight for another day because I'd like to have you on the party line while you're in this part of the country. So I say that in all fairness to Bob, that because he said he hasn't got the tape. This is not a way of trying to get out.
John, I have both the tape recorder, the amplifier, and about 50 tapes in the airplane, but
That's at Peterborough.
But you were adamant about not putting tapes
in the air.
So I respect your prohibition.
Right.
I would like to ask about the languages. Has anyone checked the accuracy
of your
transcription of the language?
In July last year, I was invited to a committee to estimate me for a Carnegie Hall appearance, and it took place in the studio I'll think of the lady's name in a moment, perhaps. And various people were brought in. There was a Mrs. Greenfield, a medium from Brooklyn, whom I have... I do not have a correct address or know where to reach her. I looked through the phone book. And in playing one song, which was in Hebrew, Mrs. Greenfield left her chair, stood upright, and started to go along with the music a little bit. And her finish, she said, there is a song that we use in the church only every 20 to 30 years or something like that, an extremely out-of-the-ordinary song. So I have done what little I could. For example, I have unpublished poems of Rudyard Kipling and Elizabeth Barrett Brown.
Have you checked on this?
I have done it in an amateurish sort of way. I have gone over it with an English teacher the other day in Mr. Manabu's work.
I wrote Kipling, the way he hit these rhymes, and he repeats,
and he repeats, what little poetry I know it sounds like Kipling.
Sounds like Kipling.
Does an American have any difficulty in enunciating the various sound structures of the different other countries, or does it come through fairly clearly?
I think it would take a professional translator, perhaps, to to figure it. I speak Portuguese and Spanish, and I understand French and Italian. And I know that the French I have heard come through Miss Brady, which is not tape recorded, by the way. This was in a private interview with someone, with perfect French. That I know.
Bob, I was saying you left me in a Paris a few moments ago, and I can't make my way out of this Paris. Where are the Venetians involved, or are they involved with Miss Brady in this communication with people of the past?
Well, John was asking about the tapes. What they might prove, why I might be keeping them, what they might add up to.
My best thought is this,
that I fell into this totally accidentally. I started taping with Miss Brady's permission, and I just couldn't believe that the next morning in the Florida sunshine, my tape recorder would say anything back that happened. So at the present moment, I am writing a book called There Shall Be Signs and Wonders in the Sky, and going through my tape methodically by date, and by the attempt to build up the weight of evidence as to what happened to us. In other words, why, to use Long John's original question, you think of yourself as being representatives of the planet Venus?
You mentioned earlier the name of another medium, another lady who apparently transcribed a Hebrew chant.
No, she heard my tape recording in Carnegie Hall, yes.
Oh, I see. But she was a medium too?
Yes, she's a local medium.
Is it necessary for a medium to verify a tape?
No, she was verifying the language. She speaks Hebrew.
Was it necessary for a medium who speaks Hebrew? Why not anyone who speaks Hebrew?
It wasn't my invitation. It was these people inviting them to judge me.
Yes, of course, but I wondered why she had to be a medium, necessarily.
It was their own idea, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
One medium likes to pass on the work of another one.
I see.
Let me catch up on a few telegrams here. This lady has requested me not to use her name. Please give me the first date of the... Oh, I see, you have a correction down here. Please give me the first date of the arrival of the original Venusian and or Mars expedition. The man who spoke to you at 2:07 sounds so very much like you, it was shattering. At 2:07, I guess that the lady means a time to her seven.
Huh?
Did you... You didn't speak of 207, did you, sir? I don't know who spoke of 207 or found out me. I was speaking, possibly, at that time. However... Yeah, I know. I was receiving, too. I was receiving, and if you notice, the message was bouncing over to Al Wilson. Of course, Al is really not here. Well, he is here. The physical body is here, but he has projected the astral body. I hope that Al... Al, will you find out what's happening with the Mystic Barber? I understand that he went up for Decoration Day to the moon. And maybe you can ask to reproject yourself up there. Let's get back to these two questions in one. Well, here.
Please, the lady would like the first date of the arrival of the original Venusian and or Mars expedition.
In the past? Are we speaking in the past tense?
When they arrived...
Well, if you happen to know when they're going to be back here in the world, you'd like to have that.
The closest answer I have to that is several references and tapes where they said that several thousand of your years, we began observing you.
Mm-hmm.
Have you received any, have you any tapes of Akhenaten incidentally about... You mentioned people like Gandhi and Kipling, I believe.
Yes.
Do you have tapes of people going way back to the Egyptians? Do you have it? Have you received any?
Oh, yes. One of the principals of our Wednesday night class, he invariably opens the class and generally speaks later on, is Nohin, a prophet of ancient Persia. And I'm not historian enough to date ancient Persia. I can't do that for you, Ellery. Mm-hmm. But Nohin... is a source, a font of wisdom that is tremendous, and his teachings harmonize perfectly with those of Simitrali. He occasionally referred to the teachings of Simitrali, so we draw crosshairs on it and narrow it down. And once again, let me say that in my case, that is very interesting to me, is that I can draw crosshairs as to what one person says and another says. For example, I do want to make a point, John. Here's a point. And another rule that we generally say in speaking is this, that my desire is to disprove all of this. And that is also misphrased. In other words, if we could be free of the Venusians, we'd be very happy to.
Why?
And I... Why?
Yes, why?
Right in the middle of that meeting again at Cocoa, Florida, before the... 350 people from the nearby Cape Canaveral guided missile base. Hamamatsu said, very slowly and with a certain amount of sadness, that it was very difficult to obtain an instrument who would work with them and be above ridicule and skepticism, but in their present instrument they had found someone. However, and he has a sentence here, he said that he realized that even this instrument that we were using wishes very often to be rid of.
Because he's referring to Miss Brady.
Miss Brady, yes.
Mm-hmm. Hasn't Miss Brady been a trance medium for almost all of her adult years?
Very true, John. But don't you realize most people who believe in mediumship will not buy the idea of the people on the other planets driving flying saucers. That's a totally different group that believes that.
You know, it's quite amazing to me. I think you mentioned that Miss Brady had the opportunity of giving her voice to Kipling.
Yeah.
In other words, that Kipling could use the voice, Mahatma Gandhi,
yeah,
and people like that. These people have... been dead for a period of time.
So, John,
the Venusians, I'm assuming for the moment, are not dead.
The ones that are using very flesh and blood.
Very good. Well, now, how does Kipling get into this? Is Kipling now on the planet Venus?
He has not said where he is. I would just take for granted he was still in the fourth dimension with the others that we are customarily in contact with, yes.
Do you think that Kipling has been talking with Venusian since he has passed on?
It's very interesting that
he certainly would be.
Practically no one of spirit
can do anything more than to acknowledge the existence of them. Mahatma Gandhi has a very beautiful take when he says, when you see the people from the other world coming through your skies in their shining vehicles, listen to them, for they are coming to help you. Now, there is a cross-reference from spirit into the Venusian. I'll tell you an interesting one. You know of spirit guides, of course.
Yeah, very familiar.
The Indians and the people who...
Well, I know Indians.
How familiar.
Yeah, always.
Miss Brady, a spirit guide, is very, very interesting. She is a bubbly, effervescent, little character.
Don't tell me her name is Dr. Felton.
Her name is Daisy. And her name on Earth was that of Daisy Crawford. She's buried in Atlanta, Georgia. And Daisy, being a spirit guide...
Have you ever checked on the Baron place?
I haven't.
Has anybody? Have you ever written down to the authorities?
Not that I know of. I used to live in Atlanta, and I'd like to get up there and look around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But Daisy is quite mischievous. And I had quite a talk with her one day, and she says, she's Snoop. That's right. And it was just before November when here we had told as many of the people as listened to the two television stations in Portland, Maine, and listened to you every night, that the flying saucers were going to fly in numbers in November, beginning in November, when the weather was right for them, and make token landings and so forth. And I went down to Washington and told a room full of colonels and majors in the Pentagon the same thing and demonstrated on tape. Daisy, I was checking up with her because, you know, being out on the limb, you teeter and you totter, as people say, that you must certainly be in making all this up or something like that. And I said, Daisy, how are the pilots coming and everything? She says, well, Mr. Bob, she says, I Snoop. And she says, the other night, she says, I heard that pilot, Johan, talking to another pilot. And he asked that other pilot, he said, are you on schedule? And the other pilot says, we think we're going to make schedule. And Johan said, let me tell you that Satellite 5 is on schedule. We are ready. And there are other times like that when Daisy said she wouldn't know Mr. Johan if she met him coming down the street. She talked to him the same way that our instrument does.
I would like to know about your spirit guide. Apparently, since you are all American in this venture, and your spirit guide conveniently seems to be American as well. How is it that we don't have a spirit guide who is, let's say, an Egyptian of an early dynasty or some such thing?
It's just the way that the ball bounces, and that just happened to be a plain, ordinary American girl.
No, I'm not objecting to that. I'm delighted. What troubles me is that apparently we have many spirits floating about in ancient times and so on.
Well, we're not talking about spirits, we're talking about guides.
Spirit guides. Well, they are spirits, are they not?
It's a bit like the army. There's a cadre that takes care of the new boys that will come in.
Oh, I see. They take over certain things.
Maybe it has a function.
May I ask you what an ancient spirit guide does, for example? Have you ever found out what other spirit guides do?
No, I'm quite naive of course. I am a Johnny come lately as of 365 days.
I do notice a great degree of skepticism in your facial expression.
I'm
not saying that.
I try, but I can't win. You see, we've seen flying saucers by appointment, by schedule, we see them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why sightings have always...
There certainly must be transmediums in various other countries. England, possibly China, Japan.
Do all of the transmediums in various other countries use American Indian guides? I don't know the answer to that one, John. I'd say that was a heritage of our own civilization right here. The Indians were very advanced, developed people.
Because in my brief experience, talking with many people who told me about it would take Mark Phillips. You've heard of Mark.
I've heard of him, yes. I know very little, John.
Mark has some mentors, Yada.
I believe there are 16 of them.
16, yeah, forward circle. Let's get away from Mark Holmes. I had a note down here. I've written down a name and I'd like to ask you.
Have you ever
asked any of these Venusians about John Otto of Chicago?
I never have, no.
Why not? You know John, don't you?
I'm very guilty of slipping my mind on important questions. Simitrelli has told me time and time again, Robert, you must write the questions down that you...
This is a rather important name.
John, let me say something here, too. I am never the boss of an interview with a Venusian.
Who does the interviewing?
They pick the subject and start off so quickly that all you can do is grab a hold and go with them, unless you can stop them for a moment and pin them down to the answer of the question.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes into something that I would like to put forth to the panel here tonight. My greatest tribulation is working for the Venusians, because they are the most difficult people to work for that I have ever seen.
May I ask you, Bob, how much time do you put in working for the Venusians?
For the last year, it has been practically full time.
You know, I wish you wouldn't have mentioned this, because the gentleman who is bringing the food from Carnegie Delicatessen, he's afraid he's going to get paid off in Venusian money this week.
He'll see more of it than I have.
This is WOR Radio, your station in New York, and this is Long John with the Party Line. I'd like to take a moment to talk about Carnegie Delicatessen and Restaurant. That's located, Carnegie Delicatessen Restaurant is located at 854 7th Avenue. That's on the corner of 55th Street and 7th. And their phone number is Plaza 72245, PL72245. They're open until 4 a.m. Not because they're sponsors, but because it's my honest opinion, I can definitely tell you that it's a wonderful place to eat. And you can call them. They'll be happy to deliver the food to your home. Or to your office. Of course, I don't imagine many people are in their offices right now. But if you happen to be employed in Midtown Manhattan, and you like to stay in your office and have your lunch delivered, if you like corned beef, pastrami, tongue, roast beef, salami, turkey, sliced chicken, any of those things, you'll find them at Carnegie Delicatessen and Restaurant. And of course, they also have many specialties, such as chicken in the pot, boiled beef, jumbo hamburgers with sliced tomato, Indian relish, sliced Bermuda onion. Then they have the famous Carnegie cheeseburger. This is made with Venusian and American cheese, which gives it a delicate flavor.
I'm getting terribly hungry.
Remarkable. It's really wonderful, the Venusian cheese. So you keep it in mind, Carnegie Delicatessen and Restaurant, 854 7th Avenue, the corner of 55th Street and 7th. And the number to call is Plaza 72245, and your hosts over there are Max, Lou, and Bernie. We have a couple of telegrams here, and I want to get a record ready. I wonder if you will do me a favor, Ellery. There's a telegram here, another one from R.D. Schofield. You can read that one, then you'll have to use that. You can take care of a couple of those for just one moment, please, if you will.
How does this system come in, Sir John?
Well, read this one now, and then you'll have to refer back to this one that arrived about 30 minutes prior.
This is from R.D. Schofield. Long John, thanks to answer to first part of earlier telegram. Please ask Bob Ewing to reply to remainder of other telegram. And this is the other telegram. Can Bob Ewing verify story of Venusian dog or other stories of people who have appeared on the program concerning planet Venus? Can he tell us more about the sciences and arts on the planet, and has he any information concerning status and nature of domestic animals as pests on Venus? Bob, I think you answered part of this.
Yes,
earlier.
The arts and the sciences.
So what
the...
about the pets?
I have no knowledge of pets whatsoever.
Pets on Venus, Venusian pets.
No, they speak of their birds quite often. They said once, there's an interesting tape made very early in the game, last June. They said that you will be successful in flight when you realize that wings are all right,
for the birds of your earth and ours, but not for airplanes.
There's another telegram here from Jerry Latanzio. I believe I have it correct. I hope I do. Bob says that Venus will stop war between us and Russia. Why wait? Hundreds are killed daily in rebellions, and eventual sneak attacks will kill thousands, perhaps millions. Why not show their force now and end killing tension and fear once and for all? This was from, I believe I gave his name, Jerry Latanzio.
That's a very good question, and one that I would like the answer to. I'm glad that I just said that the Venusians were very hard to work with because they don't come up with these little things that we would like them to do. However, they pointed out at the time of the Suez Crisis that they would influence it and affect it and stop it. And also, there was mention at approximately the same time that the mighty Chiang Kai-shek was about ready to leave his island and quack off at the mainland, perhaps, and that they were, in the case of Egypt specifically, that they would not permit that to go into open warfare. Their plan that when the new age, the new era that we are embarked upon at the present moment gets going good, they fully intend to rebuild a great deal of Egypt to its former splendor. So, they find it difficult to accomplish some of these things. However, they say that they do it by impressing the minds of people concerned and involved.
We're going to take a 20-minute coffee break. And after that time, we'll be back with you. And we have a number of telegrams here, and no doubt we'll receive more.
And I know that I have a number of questions for Bob Ewing. Bob Ewing claims that he represents the planet Venus. He's been telling us something about the Ventlers. That's a Venusian term for flying saucers, or UFOs, as some people call them on this planet. We have Ellery Lanier with us. Ellery is the fact editor of Fantastic Science Fiction. Sam Vandervert, well-known photographer, is with us. I love this telegram from Jerry Elsman, but...
Heard, John, heard.
I guess it's a very good one. This is from Jerry Elsman. I'm their boy. Can't inflate closed minds. If the Venusian girls are well stacked, can get Playboy assignment.
That's a beauty.
Lillian Lanier is with us, and we hope that you'll be with us within just 20 minutes from now. This is WOR Radio, your station in New York. We arrived a little late this morning. Actually, we didn't expect you. And I'm glad that you were kind enough to join. I gather from your appearance that you were in bed listening to the discussion. I noticed that you didn't take off your pajama top, and I noticed that your pajamas are showing underneath the cuff of your trousers. And there's certainly nothing wrong with that. I can imagine your excitement jumping out of bed and deciding to hop a cab and come down when you knew that there were free sandwiches.
I wish for the purposes of just one person who's probably listening to this radio program that you say...
I don't underestimate the amount of listeners. We run 8 and 9 every night.
No, just for one particular person who might be listening right now, I wish you would say over the air that I didn't tell you I was in bed.
Thank you. Would you care to ask a question? I imagine that you have something in mind.
Ben, are you a blank?
He is. I have a question.
I yield to Lillian.
You people should sit in Florida and listen to this.
I have an idea that there are many listeners who heard Bob say earlier that he, as well as the medium, Enid Brady, would very much like to sort of be rid of the Venusians at some point, or possibly as soon as possible, that it is a bother. to you both. Am I correct?
A bother would be the wrong word, that they are very hard taskmasters who don't fulfill our normal requirements for proof. They think that they do this, they do that, we should understand, and so forth.
Well, I understood you have been working very hard for the Venusians, and you feel perhaps you'd rather not work so hard anymore and tackle some other tasks.
You get to that feeling, and then all of a sudden the voice of Simitrali comes through, and she starts in on you, and in exactly 42 seconds, you're back in the fold again.
Well, what I would like to know, and I'm sure it has occurred to some listeners, is why, for example, don't you and Enid Brady hand in your resignation?
You pass that point of no return that seems to be an attachment of this business, that there is so much to it. For example, the flying saucer element you can forget about for a while. In other words, they aren't every day down here bustling about showing themselves. While in such a lull, you still have on the Wednesday night classes the Simitrali philosophy coming through, her nutritional lectures, and development, things like that, which are good by themselves. They stand by themselves.
Well, you might partake of those and resign from the work, for example.
The work is really too fascinating, and the satisfaction comes. It's like the cycles of the manic depressive. They say a person who leads a smooth life doesn't reach the highs nor the lows that are so...
Boy, let's pull Nicole up right there.
did you hear the
highs and lows?
Yes, very definitely.
Boy, yeah. He's been rolling back those highs, and he never knew it had anything to do with philosophy.
Well, actually, Les, I understand, is working over the Decoration Day weekend. He's back with the Roddy Potts group.
I heard he...
That's a trio, isn't it?
He's taking
time
off.
Four men.
Oh, he's ghosting Roddy Potts' memoirs, isn't he?
Yeah. No. Well, Potts can't write. Ben, you evidently had some interest in the discussion. I think, in all fairness, we should give you the opportunity of asking Mr. Ewing a couple of questions.
Well, the thing I want to know is, well, why are the Venusians interested in us?
Okay. They're interested in us because... as they say, and is reinforced by Mr. Gandhi from the fourth dimension, left...
Gandhi?
Gandhi.
You don't mean Mahatma.
Yeah. You missed that part of the program. Yes.
From Mahatma Gandhi.
The same.
And Kipling.
It's the same Mahatma?
Same fellow.
And Kipling.
And Kipling.
Speaking very beautifully and very convincingly with the normal vocabulary and voice.
Kipling
and
Mahatma Gandhi. Those two must be alive.
They take a book of both the same night.
No, that must be a riot. They're both out there in the fourth dimension.
They all agree that we have stumbled across...
How do they resolve their differences, their historical differences, Kipling and Mahatma Gandhi?
Those things are more or less taken care of, I think, when we go into another dimension, let us say.
They both... You go into another dimension, you forget about India?
Not about India. That man will never forget about India.
Well, I imagine
his words for us are all for India.
Yeah, but I imagine Kipling and Mahatma Gandhi have substantially different opinions about India.
Mr. Kipling isn't teaching. He is in no position...
This is Rudyard,
he
isn't
it? Right, Rudyard. He is giving unpublished poems, which is his forte, and which he does very well. Gandhi...
I wish he wouldn't, but I was
feeling
a crummy poet.
Compared...
Is his poetry improved?
I am not a poetry critic. I really can't say. But both have stated that we have stumbled across a natural force of the creative energy of the universe. We're employing it and playing with it, this nuclear fission. Go on into the hydrogen, go into the cobalt, and we are perfectly capable of blowing ourselves off into space as a flaming mass, unless something is done to retard it. They are going to do their best, but man still has freedom of will, and we can nullify their best efforts.
Well, why are they so concerned? Is Venus in danger?
Yes. We are definitely upsetting the entire solar system. They can feel it in their ventlers.
Well, I mean, if they've mastered the power to make ventlers and fly at speeds surpassing human imagination and travel from planet to planet and sweep the face of radioactive fallout. No, why don't they just direct a force screen above Venus and let us merrily blow ourselves to pieces? That's
what I would do.
That isn't as easily done as...
As building a vent?
As you would imagine, no. I think of it in quite a simple little thing. I think of it as the neighbor. If there's a neighbor in the neighborhood who insists on every day putting his garbage in his driveway, and it is being tracked up and down the neighborhood by the dogs and the children and so forth, the neighborhood has gotten together, all of the planet, and voted that tonight we're going to present the planet Earth with a garbage can and teach them how to use it.
Well, I would move out of the neighborhood.
Well, the neighborhood is well tied together. I think Ellery has something here.
I think there's something being held back here, Bob. I don't know if it is that you don't want to talk, or your the delegates from the planet Venus don't want to talk. There's something is off here. I hear talk of the planet Venus and the planet Mars, and sometimes of the moon. But you did mention that the Venusians have visited the stars.
True.
What's wrong? Why don't we hear from the planet Mercury? Why don't we hear from Saturn and Neptune and the rest?
We have heard from Jupiter, Mars, and I believe Saturn.
You mean this isn't something that is being held back?
No.
It sounds very suspicious.
No. For example, we'll get a visiting scientist or something from Jupiter that'll discuss things with us. I think there is a quotation I remember from tape where they said, after all, we are the largest planet and so forth, therefore we have our forces and so forth.
Well, what do you call the citizens of Jupiter?
The Jupiterians.
The Jupiterians,
Not Jovians?
No. I'll tell you another thing, of course. They have pointed out that the entire universe is not entirely under the same benevolent force for good. There are forces for evil. Orion, and this seems to tally with some of the books I'm running across, is a force for evil, they say. Some of these ships in the atmosphere are from Orion, yes.
From Orion?
Orion.
Is it the constellation Orion?
The constellation Orion, yes. It's very unfriendly.
Well, how do you figure it out, the constellation? I'm lost now. The constellation Orion, you're assuming that it's all one family of stars?
Yeah, she said she hasn't used the word. You see, there's another thing that I'm doing with all these tapes that Long John said. I'm trying to trip her on vocabulary. She can't use the word constellation.
Yes.
On this tape, she couldn't find it in her vocabulary. She said the Orion group.
Well, I don't know. I'm thinking of the nebula now, Ryan, which is a whole great big mess of stars and
the stars that go to form up the constellation Orion, some of them are millions of light years distant from each other.
Let's put it this way.
Second and third magnitude stars that have no relationship.
Talking tonight about San Mateo and Redwood City and so forth, there are some of us that know that that's the San Francisco area. There are others who do not know it, but we can identify it as the San Francisco area.
Yeah, but you wouldn't talk about the San Francisco area. You wouldn't include China in it because China happens to be...
I didn't include them.
About the Orion constellation is the same thing. No, that's not the point.
You're looking at it from a different viewpoint. Now, don't forget the Venusians continually remind you that your concept of light years is entirely fallacious and that our thinking in terms of time and space are fallacious also. They remind us that science must start at the bottom and once again climb the tree, and he will accidentally trip over the things that he has missed on the first go-round.
This gets me. What's wrong with our concept of time and space, as pointed out by the Venusians?
Well, we covered that early in the evening, for example, that an ellipse or a parabola and a straight line and so forth will not, according to their way of thinking, take one of our Air Force pilots, providing he has a proper plane, in a straight line out to Venus. It can't be done because space is not a void, they say. It is full of very definitely solid objects, and one must go around them or meet an untimely death.
Yeah, it's full of dust particles and asteroids.
In other words, for the purpose of the discussion, rather than pick the details apart, we must assume certain things that if we feel that the Venusians are speaking with us and so forth, that they have a closer knowledge by running their spaceships around the universe to these places that they are talking about beyond our knowledge.
They're going to land in force, and then they're going to make overtures?
They'll make overtures as they
I don't want to use the word move in, as they become known, recognized, and display what they care to
display. In other words, you mean they're going to take over?
Take over in our vocabulary has a bad connotation. They are going to show us a better life. There is a quotation, we offer you our way of life, far better than your own.
They're offering us their way of life by landing in force?
True. Hamamatsu concludes...
Is it forcing it on us?
My friend, if it takes force to quit the devastation that we might achieve by the efforts at Cape Canaveral and employing cobalt bombs in the nose of those things, wouldn't you be in favor of it? Would you vote with us?
By using force? No.
What kind of a force? A positive force for construction.
You said...
Not a decent
force. No, wait. Now, look, words are pretty important to me. They're landing in force. That means that large numbers of them?
Large numbers of them in every portion of the world, yes.
And they're going to take over. You said that also.
I don't like the word take over.
They are going to offer
to us on a platter...
All right, fine.
Their way of life.
And what if we say no? We like the way things are.
I'm afraid you would be outvoted.
Outvoted by who? People
who want an end of illness.
All right. Let's take the supposition that everyone on Earth is as thick-headed and stupid as I am, and they say, Venusians, go home. We like the way things are.
You have no basis for such a supposition.
Thank you, Ellen. What would the Venusians do in the case where they meet with an active resistance from Earth people who want no way of...
They will turn around and retreat. Because they have stated, yes, that they will do their best, but not force anything.
This sounds very different to you.
That's why this schedule, if you can see their point of view for a minute, and to answer Lillian's question as to why it is difficult working with them, their schedule is laid out. They are on schedule. They are proceeding on little cat's feet, very slowly, coming along to do it properly, their way. They will not listen to it our way. In other words, they will not probably accept our invitation if we make it within 5 minutes to address a group in Madison Square Garden, which would please us and would not be their way of doing business.
Right, are they source of object fighters below the waters in the Persian Gulf? And there have been several such reports, one in the China Seas. There was a theory that some of these flying saucers came from no other world but from the bottoms of our oceans, and wouldn't it be a perfect decoy device for them to send you messages that they came from Venus and they came from Mars, and in effect they came from this civilization at the bottom of the oceans and were planning to take over, and this was a perfect foil to fool us, to make us look into the skies when they really were coming up out of the ocean?
I think you can reduce what you've just said very simply to the thing that is generally thrown out first when you mention mediumship, is the fact that, do you know whether or not you are doing business with demons and evil sources and so forth? A person who has had mediumship all of their life can test their sources, can test their contacts.
Do you have a directional finder device?
Miss Brady is able to do that, yes.
And does this directional device work, finding device work through multidimensional methods?
Oh, yes, because as we said, there is no time, there is no space. There are the sixth and seventh dimensions beyond the fifth.
And you can feel pretty certain that these aren't waylaying devices for creatures coming up from the bottoms of the oceans.
Oh, no. That would merely be, something that might fill up an empty space in a magazine.
Well, I feel very reassured after hearing you say this, Bob.
Working with these people day and night for 365 days, I and everyone who has come near them is certainly assured that they have nothing but the very best in mind.
I wanted to ask you one thing. In the instructions and lessons that are being delivered from the Venusians, and I gather from the Martians, and possibly from the Jupiterians...
Jovians.
Well, Jovians, I understand, is not the correct terminology then. I think that we are more or less Jovians around the party line, but in any case, the messages that they transmit, the lessons that they teach, are these lessons in reasoning and thinking in order to understand things, or is this a teaching of how to use intuition? Can you say anything about that at all?
I would say that as you listen to them, they are very basic facts which would escape our ordinary attention. For example,
Scimitarii,
well, not factual in concrete hammer-nail sense. But, for example, let's take a quick illustration that comes to mind. Scimitarii has pointed out in one of her lessons that there is ever constant motion, that down to your fingertips, every portion of you is in continual state of motion. As is, as we know here, these microphones are not sitting on the table. You know all about that. The molecules are rushing around in the microphones. The table has molecules and so forth. So this building is a bunch of molecules sitting on top of the earth and so forth. But Scimitarii has pointed out that all life is continual motion. There is no stagnation. No chance, either in this existence or others, to stand still.
Even an absolute zero?
There is no such thing.
No?
Then, going in, as Lillian led into caller. Caller is a very, very fine importance. That makes me think a little. You know, because the spectrum is something that is, after all, basic. And it has its functions back and forth through, I understand, metallurgy, physics, chemistry, and things like that. And you know, what we are discussing here tonight is the fact that perhaps it is possible for Miss Brady, the only thing about mediumship as I would see it, is that she can see above the normal spectrum, hear above the audible range. Now, Miss Brady has a trouble, if we can get scientific for a moment. Miss Brady has a problem when, at Sanford, Florida, the Naval Air Station is conducting maneuvers with the fleet in the Atlantic east of Sanford Naval Air Station, because her home in Ormond Beach, Florida, is between them. The frequency of the vibrations used in transmission and so forth keep her awake at night. She can hear them. We discussed this with a man.
Do you hear radio waves?
Yes. We have discussed this with a man.
How can you hear an electromagnetic radio?
So we sit here discussing hi-fi. I have been tested for 13.5. Maybe Long John can still go to 15. You can go to 16 and so forth.
Oh, no, that's very different. How can you hear an electromagnetic radiation? Now,
how can you feel heat and things like that? Does light travel or is light? Those are problems that have
to
be
solved.
It is.
Now, fellas, if we're going to settle any problems, I'm going to settle one right now. This is WOR Radio, your station in New York, 710 on the dial.
About the good intentions of the Venusians, and he said before that the Venusians said that they were going to offer us their way of life. And I have always, in my own experience, felt that whenever someone offered me something with very good intentions, I also had the right to refuse it, and they would not feel in any way hurt about it. You seem to think that if something was offered in good faith, it would have to be accepted.
Have to be accepted? No, I think that... I may be putting myself in someone else's shoes, but that it would be generally accepted, because I, for one, if they could stop Rock and Roll or something, I think I would vote, and I think there'd be quite a few people.
I love Rock and Roll.
Me too.
You were attacking Rock and Roll.
Oh, not only attacking it,
I think it's in many instances, one of the most wonderful things that's happened.
Do you mean to say, Bob Ewing, that if the Venusians had control over this planet, that they would decide what they think would be best for us to listen to? In other words, we wouldn't have choice. If you prefer classical music and somebody else wants jazz and somebody else wants rock and roll, and if the Venusians think that rock and roll is not good for us, they are going to make the decision.
Aren't the newspaper headlines full of tie-ups between delinquency and rock and roll?
Well,
hasn't jazz had its bad connotations and so forth?
I don't care for rock and roll myself, but I would like to have somebody prove to me that rock and roll, that there's any connection between rock and roll and juvenile delinquency. I think if you'll remember, back in the late 30s, When Benny Goodman was the big thing in my book, he's still great. But when we had Benny Goodman around and we had these big shows at the Paramount Theater, the kids were dancing in the aisle, and there was a lot of stories around that this music was not good for the youngsters. I'm talking about swing, which today we sit back as older people. I mean, comparatively speaking, we say this is wonderful.
You know, why is it unpopular to stomp out things that the general public likes so well?
Why is it unpopular? Well, I imagine that you feel that rock and roll should be abolished.
Well, it's defended as though it were mother love or something of equally...
Bob, I don't consider myself a member of the general public at all. I like rock and roll.
Well, there could be no further excuse for these radio stations throughout the country playing it all day long.
Yes, but I like it individually. I discovered it all by myself. It has nothing to do with what everyone else says. And I found out that there was a great current of this thing throughout the country.
Count the factories. Pace the music with the work and so forth. Don't they start out with a certain tempo in the morning and go through the day very scientifically and things like that? Doesn't it upset the normal disturbances that affect your nervous system by just whacking at you all day?
Let me ask you this then, Bob.
You don't have to listen.
Bob, no way. No, Bob, here's something. Supposing that you're sitting in your home and you're reading a book. Do you think that you could sit and listen to swing music?
No, I know I couldn't.
All right. And you couldn't listen to rock and roll?
Okay.
So would you abolish swing and rock and roll because you can't read a book in the same
time
and listen to it?
Well, I think we're putting it on a quite a different plane. I mean, we're getting down to where we're defending something in a peculiar fashion. In other words, let me ask you again. Aren't our mental institutions full?
Of rock and rollers?
Are full, period. Without mentioning with whom? I mean, you're subjecting You're subjecting a physical body.
Who's a mental institution? Rock and rollers?
Psychologists.
Are people who haven't been able to stand the pace of life. The exigencies of normal living and so forth have been too much for them.
You know, in my
How did we get to the mental institution all of a sudden? We're talking about a guy's thing, a couple of rock and roll records, and we wind up in a mental institution.
It's not
no
far
sense.
From this panel.
Are you going back this morning, Bob?
Yes, I think so. After about noon or so.
You'll put you back in the jacket, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Look, you know, when
hands outside now, Jack.
You know, he's waiting for me. That's why.
Oh, I thought that was my man.
You know, we have Muzak in our...
We have Muzak.
Muzak.
Yeah. Yeah, what about it?
In our office. And, you know, most of the time it's very, very soothing and all the rest of it. But at certain times, I don't want to hear it. I get up and I turn it off. I mean, these rhythms don't upset me if they upset me. These vibrations so pound at me all day.
Gentlemen, I represent Florida, and I fully sit here anticipating the moving of the entire, at least 80% of the North down there eventually to avoid some of the things.
I have the WOR weather balloon in my hand from the temperature in Midtown Manhattan. Pardon me, 56 degrees. Humidity, 44. No kidding. Our good man, Ted White, I think that's a very clever bit. He brought in a balloon, and he's got it marked the WOR weather balloon. It's a clever, it's funny bit, don't you think? Very good. Wonder where Ted White stole the idea.
Well, isn't that the balloon they use regularly to get the weather reports done?
No. We open the window. We have a high-powered telescope, and we check the thermometer, the Pepsi-Cola thermometer in front of the Liga drugstore. And that's the way we check it. There you go. Yes.
Getting away from rock and roll.
We haven't even been with it yet, Dad, but go ahead.
And mental institutions. And various other things. See, you said something before that intrigued me. You said... We, like all these things that we've been flipping over, that, I mean, there's these you're throwing so much at us, I can't quite assimilate it. But one thing stuck out in my mind. You said something before about the Venusians have knowledge or operate in sixth and seventh dimensional spaces.
I didn't say that. I said those dimensions existed.
Those dimensions existed. Well, this is very fabulous and interesting to me, because for the past few days I've been doing some work on n-dimensional vector spaces, and up until the present moment I always thought that, say, fifth and sixth and seventh dimensional spaces were mathematical abstractions of a great deal of beauty and rigor and value. I never knew they actually existed.
We're sitting in two different schools, aren't we?
I would say two different worlds. I mean, could you describe what a fifth dimensional space is to me? I mean, I could describe to you what an n-dimensional vector space is.
What you are taught that it is. All I can do.
No, which I learned in the last 3 days.
Is to be the guy that runs the tape recorder to record what the Venusians are telling me. Don't forget, my personality has nothing to do with it.
This is my personality. If someone said fifth-dimensional space to me, I would immediately, my eyes would light up, and I would say, these things exist, and they would say yes, and I would say, of what degree equation forms this space, or what are the coordinates of this space?
Well, why couldn't we ask the Venusians?
I said I would ask the Venusians.
Yes, Ben, I would like you to make the motion here that Long John put on the Venusians some evening. Let them talk to the panel, and you people ask them, you see. That's why I might
would
be here.
Would they be willing?
To introduce... Oh, I have been sitting here for about a half hour, somehow feeling that they would, yes, as a matter of fact.
How would
we arranged it in October there, I'm quite sure it would have taken place.
How would they do it?
Miss Brady would simply sit here in the chair.
Well, you just said you've been sitting here for half hour. Are you getting a message?
Because that's another thing. I certainly have given everyone to understand that I am not in the least sensitive, but somehow I have felt in the last half hour that I would like to prevail upon Long John to put them on directly to the tune of about an hour and a half. I think that's the longest I've heard them speak yet.
You mean to have Miss Brady here in person?
Yes, here in
person.
Let
her go into a trance.
Let her go into the trance, and you simply fight this out with him, Astrali, and Hamamatra, and whatever.
Well, I can't even say it, not alone to fight.
I would love to speak to Sim Astrali. She intrigues me.
She is the most gracious personality.
Does she wash her sweaters in real life? Will you check next time?
I've been told that she was... clothing mostly in purples and so forth and gold, and it's not the consistency of a sweater, let us say.
I'd like to ask you, Bob, since you are so much against, what is considered to be popular music, what type of music do the Venusians play?
They have not described the type, but they have plenty of music. As a matter of fact, Hamble described the little musical instrument that he played, not very well, as he admitted. That he blows to.
Yes.
And when
a wind
asked,
instrument.
He described that, yes.
A wind instrument.
A wind instrument.
Like a recorder?
Yes, I would assume something too.
Would that be like any of our music that we have, let's say, in the classical repertoire or any?
I would say so, yes.
Of any particular century or...
I don't know. I like the recording, the music of the planets that Gustav Flaubert, I think, wrote it. But I play it occasionally, thinking that perhaps it may have some kind of a connection. I don't know.
You have some Flaubert?
You never know, because whether or not he might have been impressed. Because the Venusians speak continually of impressing people to bring various things to happen. Mm-hmm.
But you could not describe the music to us in terms of any of the classical styles.
No, I have no information on that subject whatsoever. Mm-hmm. But my point was merely that the human organism, mental and physical, we would be very guilty of sitting here and condoning a whole bunch of things that it was being subjected to, one right after the other, rock and roll being one. That's all.
Well, no, that's ridiculous. That is merely a personal preference. Really, now, when it comes down to music or the arts, finally, it is a personal preference. And there's neither good or evil involved in it.
Have the Venusians ever said anything about rock and roll?
No, they haven't. They've spoken about nutrition the way you eat.
They don't like it that way, do
you? Oh, no, no.
What are their views on Shemitah?
The subject,
do the Venusians have any opinions on sheep dresses and chemises?
No, I'm afraid we won't get into that. The conversation is quite serious.
And this is very serious, too. This is WOR Radio, your station in New York, and this is Long John with the Party. I don't know what happened in here tonight. I'm coughing and choking up. What are we up? The air conditioning blasting?
Those are rays.
Mother Tinklepaw. What do we have? Four, I'm telling you.
Those There's are a rays. Telegram here, John.
Oh, great. Lucky for you. Oh, here. I have one, too.
Well, this is what you were talking about. Oh. Something that was happening. This is who Sally Chase or Chias, I'm sorry. Gene is right.
Great author.
Gene is right. WOR was flooded with outer space sounds similar to your entrance and exit music. What about religion on Venus? Do they believe that Earth does all kinds of religions? Another one, or did you want to... Okay.
I don't know what's happening.
Well, I'll read this
for
the telegram.
Killing me. We'll have to get Rodney Dexter to fill in tomorrow night. Here's one more from Souders or Souders, W-A Souders, S-O-U-D-E-R-S. Your transmission interrupted three times. Stations on either side transmitting. This is from Kew Gardens. Well, we've had a number of complaints this morning. People claim that... From time to time, the signal could not be heard. I don't know what it is. And I don't think it has anything to do with satellite 2 or 5. Although we've been told, what is it, number 2 hopping over New York?
Yes, that's in charge of the New York area. 4 is down around Washington. We haven't gotten into that.
Yeah. Lots of 4 being Washington. You want to read this one, Mr. Isker?
Hey, this is from the same gentleman before with that telegram that took so long to get here, and this one was sent from Philadelphia, and it was sent at 3:08 and got here at 4 o'clock. And this is the Long John Station, WOR. East is east and west is west, and Venus and Earth shan't meet. If Ewing would come in out of the sun and protect his head from the heat. But there be neither UFOs, ventures, nor saucers flying, built by the Venusians, yet to cruise as far as Orion. Signed, Amos Kipling, Reinhardt, in astral body, Philly.
That's beautiful. Here's one from Pennington, New Jersey. Radio went dead, too. Ellison Ballard. What do you mean the radio went dead, too? What else was dead? All right. Last call for telegrams. We'll take about 5 more minutes, and then we'll have to wrap up the teletype department. You can pick up your phone in any community where you may be at the present time, and be sure and tell your operator, your Western Union operator, that we're going to close our teletype in about 15 minutes. And if she doesn't guarantee to get the telegram in our studio within 15 minutes, forget the whole deal. Do you have another telegram?
Yes, this one is from Margaret F. Brother Ewing, greetings. Careful ears, listen. Don't talk modes of travel. Courage appreciated. You'll have explanations. Thanks and courage. Margaret F. P.S. The Numinati.
Did you know who it is?
No.
I do.
You don't know the lady? She's the one who talked with Tesla. You've never met her? Tesla has been talking with her during the last year or so.
I may know her.
Yeah, you do know her. Well, I think that we got a couple of more telegrams coming in. We're talking with Bob Ewing this morning. The goodwill ambassador from Venus. And Ben Iskwith, who we've been told, we shouldn't announce it tonight, we possibly won't tomorrow night, but Ben will be representing the planet Venus in the New York area after tonight?
No, Pluto. I talk more with my personality.
Let's see. Who else is around? Ellery and Lillian Lanier? Bob the Mantler? What's happening out there, Bob? Any action? You're waiting to hear from Philadelphia, all right?
Well, they take long to come in.
Yeah. Say, move up, Bob.
Come on,
Bob.
Get close to that mic. Where are you going?
No. What happened?
It's some of the Venusian double.
About to run the dart.
Out in
the... Hit it. You flushed it now. Do the Venusians have any opinions about poltergeists?
No, Venusians haven't. It's not on their beat. But Miss Brady has quite a bit of information. She had an experience with one.
We'd like to hear about it.
Poltergeists are generally thought to be earthbound spirits who have a tremendous power to achieve what they want to do. They want, for example, for some reason of their own, to upset some person. For example, Miss Brady has a story of having been in Chesterfield, Indiana, some years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And
they were all the spiritualists meet.
That is one of the places. And there are the two little girls, one in New York State, one in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And
you have
all
the stories?
Oh, yes.
What's it
in? It's Casabaga, Florida, in Casabaga, New York.
Yeah.
Lilydale and Lilydale.
Mm-hmm.
It's just outside of old Daytona Beach by about 40 miles, and Miss Brady speaks there quite often. So that not having accommodations where most everyone was put up at Chesterfield, Indiana, there was a cottage available, and at the last minute, while arriving on the scene, Miss Brady was given that in lieu of some other place where she could spend the night. So as she tells me the story, in the middle of the evening, in the middle of the night, she was woken out of a sound sleep, and the usual business of the chiffonier, the drawers popping out, things flying around, everything coming out of a bag, and she straightened up, looked across the room, and she saw the manifestation of this poltergeist, the spirit, and she affixed him with a good glare, and, "What are you about, little man?" And she spoke with him psychically and asked just what he was about. And he went off, having a chance to put his story across and so forth. He went into a story. It has something, I can't remember it exactly, but it was roughly something to the effect that he had owned the farm where this was now situated, and he had given the property, I think, to his son to build the farm, work the farm for the rest of his days, raise his children on it, and so forth. The son probably left for the city, disappointed the father, sold the farm, and now here was this Camp Chesterfield, and somebody else was in that house that was to be kept for the family and so forth. So he was quite upset. And through the years, he had made it a business to make anyone very uncomfortable who would occupy the place. So Miss Brady talked it out with him, and she explained to him that he was using a very negative force, which wasn't the thing to do, that he had a lot of studying to do, a lot to learn, and that he should ascend a little bit and get off this earthbound level that he was on and go about his business. Miss Brady, of course, having a very forceful and positive attitude about the whole thing, and she sent him packing. The next morning, there were people, of course, that knew that this phenomenon had gone on for a number of years. And she told the story, finally, when they said, "Were you disturbed during the evening?" And as far as she knows, to this day, there's never been anything.
You know, Bob, having come, having lived in Europe for a while and having been brought up in the climate of poltergeist, where the term originates, we always thought of them as something that was rather fun than anything that was negative. In fact, all the poltergeists that I ever heard about were fun to be with. We never had any trouble with them.
They're
mischievous. In fact, we used to welcome them.
That's when we get that old expression, more fun than a barrel of pentagon.
Well, popping corks out of bottles, throwing your things out of your luggage, it isn't damaging or anything, but it's a nuisance when it's
ready. Well, I think the attitude of most people about poltergeists perhaps is negative. I don't think the poltergeist is negative at all, because if you approach the poltergeist in the spirit of fun, you will find out that he is not very damaging at all.
But you see, that's only one manifestation. It is generally thought among mediums that obsessive drinking, the compulsion to drink, dipsomania, and so forth, and alive things are the enforcement of a stronger will upon a weaker personality who is still in the earth body. But there is a force that has passed, who was deeply involved, let us say, in compulsive drinking, and he takes the attitude in our slang, the monkey on the back.
You mean a poltergeist or someone who might have been involved in drinking?
No, I'm saying there's a relationship of earthbound spirits taking various manifestations. The mischievous poltergeist on one hand, the person causing compulsive drinking on the other, ruining a man's life, losing his job.
But poltergeists are not necessarily mischievous.
Ben?
Well, I mean, what kind of kicks does the spirit get when the spirits come into the earth body? I mean, the spirit is living.
Well, he's driving another man. He's exerting his will on yours.
But he's doing it because he's a former alcoholic.
Look at the case of the Three Faces of Eve. Give that
four one. Faces of Eve.
All right, fourth one just came.
Yeah.
Think that one through. It is explainable in this form. Where else did all the personalities come from, so forth? You will have to investigate this possibility and the incarnation.
No. Wait. One thing at a time. I'm very slow tonight. Look, if man is driven to excessive drinking because a former alcoholic spirit has inhabited his earth body.
Yes, with a very
what
strong...
What kind of kicks does a spirit get out of drinking good, hard, 100-proof bourbon? This is a spirit.
The spirit derives the satisfaction...
I notice how I'm avoiding the pun on the word spirit with great...
Your strength is
the passage into another dimension isn't always known. Most mediums can cite cases during the Second World War of boys who came to mediums all over the world who suddenly came into circles and who penetrated a group sitting in a seance and so forth, just coming in saying, where am I? I was standing there, I was lighting a cigarette with Joe, and I can't find Joe. I can't find anybody. I'm the such and such field artillery battalion such and such. I have a case of a boy who came to me, quoted his whole army serial number, his regiment, his division, and so forth, and told exactly where he was killed in France and so forth. And I have taken that up with the military.
And
so
what happened when you took it up? What did they do?
Get in street.
Well, I've always said that work is the curse of the drinking team.
So you have this passage where the spirit isn't aware of what he is.
You really believe this?
I have talked to enough people, John. I've traveled a very great deal.
Alive or dead?
Both. And it's one of those things
I
can't disprove.
I don't mean what your condition was at the time. I mean the people that you were interviewing.
I can't disprove my work, and I would like to invite any panel member or yourself or anyone listening to come with me in research on this. That's all we want. We want it from colleges, and we've been wanting it from the government.
Look, Bob, let's get back for a moment to you're representing the planet Venus. Have you presented your credentials at the United Nations?
No.
That would be an interesting thing, wouldn't it?
No,
it would
be a good
afternoon down there.
How come? I mean, reason do you have for not presenting
very good reason. I don't come to New York too often, and this city and Washington are not pleasurable to...
You don't mean that in a sense, do you?
No, I'm saying that presentations are not received as they are in other quarters. And just the economics alone of piling up hotel bills and trying to see the right man at the United Nations.
Do you know that James Avery Joyce, who's an international... barrister. You were on the program, weren't you?
Yeah, very, very, very fabulous.
He has written a couple of... He was the guest editor for the Saturday Review of Literature in 2 or 3 weeks. And he has discussed the possibility of space travel. And he is at the United Nations. And we've had Ben Cohn on the program as well. And they're all interested in space travel.
When did you have him?
You had Ben Cohn?
Oh, sure.
Ben Cohn was on a Saturday night with Major Markoff and, and Mel Scaloni, and I think it's this year.
Oh, well, we had a very interesting talk with him.
No, he was on, I'm pretty sure it was this year or the latter part of last year. The reason I mentioned these two names, it would seem to me that if these gentlemen are so interested in space travel, the possibility of going to the moon and to other planets, don't you think they would honestly be interested in your credentials if you could produce them, that you're representing Venus, and that they would work with you?
I'm a little bit backward about taking such a step. They might contact us secretly as your no-name telegrams do. But I am not.
We don't have any no-name telegrams. In other words, the names. We have the names.
Why aren't the names revealed?
Well, a lot of people don't desire to have their name mentioned.
Does Major Keyhole do the same thing in NICAP? You can send your 750 and we won't use your name if you don't want it listed as a member?
Well,
what's
wrong
with like a concealing thing?
Oh, it's not concealing
anything.
If
a person has genuine belief, why shouldn't they lay the cards on the table?
No, I don't think so.
How many books on the subject of flying saucers tell you on the first page
what
the contactee is doing and how he is doing it? Can you name one?
No, but I have a telegram here from Fort Lee, New Jersey. And they've requested me not to use their name. Here's the message. Ben is a very clever man. Signed, Mrs. Benjamin Iskowitz. Oh, I should have mentioned her name.
I have no relatives in Fort Lee.
I beg your pardon?
I have no relatives in Fort Lee. I'm also a happy fact.
John, I think this flying saucer mystery will be solved when people lay the cards on the table and we proceed to bring the thing out in the open and go ahead. As a matter of fact, sometimes I think the Gray Barker story about the men in black may have a logical conclusion that he became as Lillian has led into a few times somewhat disgusted working with the space people because they have given us to understand that they I think there is a quotation by a fellow named Hi Lee that went back home to Venus. He used to be on Satellite 5, and he was in charge of flight operations. And he, one night on tape, he said, I have been a very patient man. For 4 years, I've been trying to start this unit. And you know the history of Miss Brady. 4 years prior to my coming with her, she had this whole thing.
What was his name?
Hi Lee.
Yeah, what if he's related to One Lung Lee, who did my laundry?
I would like to ask, before Miss Brady and yourself, who transmitted the messages that the Venusians were trying to get to Earth? Apparently, they have been trying to reach us for a long time.
Oh, yes, they have. They've been completely disappointed with the people who get to a certain point, are afraid of the glare of publicity, the scorn, and they have businesses. In a certain city in this country, and I've discussed this with Long John, there was a group of people connected with airlines, lawyers, merchants, doctors, and they sat with Miss Brady each Friday night after flying her there, giving her the airline ticket. They sat there with their tape recorders, and then as they progressed, they actually had Miss Brady, don't forget, can do this in France, a board here with the blueprint and so forth, and her muscles can be moved, and she drew the whole vessel with the whole propulsion system and so forth.
How do you spell that, sir?
V-E-N-T-L-A. Not the up-to-date thing. They've had six prototypes just since I've been working with them, and they're always talking about the new model. But a one that would have flown, yes. Now, these people, when the Venusians put it through them, as they did to us, you've heard what we're doing, go out and bring it into the fore so that this program of ours develops. Each person turned to himself and he said, I'm a doctor, a lawyer, a merchant, whatever he was. I can't do it. By mutual consent, the tape recordings were either destroyed or the most important ones put in a file. The thing was disbanded. There has been no publicity released, and you can't get any of them to talk. They dropped it.
Ben?
Well, I don't know. It's been pretty good for sign painters, but look, I don't know what all this hocus-pocus and hodgepodge about. Why do they have to have meetings? I mean, if someone... I would believe in Venusians.
The minute a flight of them went over Washington and they came on the radar.
Exactly. Well, maybe Tannehill told me, as I said, it is this. They said it happened. How's he believe?
I'm not talking about saucer sightings. I'm talking about Venusians with a new way of life and all the rest of them. Now, if a bunch of them staged their rally in Central Park or something...
Didn't you see what I told you a half hour ago, that they won't accede to the way you want it done? They're going to do it their way? That's what makes them hard to get along with.
Who the heck with them? What do they want?
Careful what you say, Ben. Careful.
They have this great new glorious mode of life, and the heavens are going to open up to us when they reveal their secret.
They tell us.
But they're going to go around it like Dog Alley?
Ellery has been mentioning the 10 satellites orbiting the Earth and so forth. Aren't there a great many stories in flying saucer repertoire that say that some of our largest observatories have spotted objects that they can't account for? There's rumors to that.
No, I'm not talking about UFOs, and I'm not talking about flying saucer reports. I'm talking about Venusians with this heaven on Venus, I guess. I was going to say heaven on Earth for a minute. Well, this heaven on Earth that they're going to bring to us. Why don't a body of Venusians come down?
That's what I don't understand. I'm working on the same problem you are, my friend. We're all in the same boat.
And you don't understand.
And I'm working with
it. Now, Ben, that's what the Indians thought when Columbus sailed away after his first touching of the shores of the Americas.
But could they sit where you go?
Wait,
what you would
Columbus?
Take the time?
What did Columbus say?
Columbus Circle. That's in New York.
What is
Let me remind you people that the general tire and rubber dealer in your community has a wonderful offer for you. And you can find the one that's located nearest to your home by checking the red book, the yellow pages. And when you find that name and address, you hustle over that. Because a dollar will get you extra thousands of miles, okay, when you're driving. Those tires there, they're so fabulous, the general tires, that... You should have them on your car. They are the best. We're going to be talking tonight at midnight with a group of people about ESP, and we're going to conduct a couple of tests. It's going to be quite the thing, I understand. Great. And, of course, Saturday night we'll be talking about the Beat Generation. And...
Who are we talking with ESP
about? Who are we going to be talking with ESP about?
Who's on the ESP?
Jack Bell. No relation to Dave Bell. And actually, this happens to be a motion picture outfit. They produced a number of films, and they're working on some ESP films. And I understand there'll be something very, very... Pardon me. It'll be something out of the ordinary, and you better tell your friends and neighbors about it. Yes, sir, Bob. We've only a couple of minutes left.
I want to say to Ben, I played a tape the other day, totally by accident. With so many tapes, I don't know the contents of each. But what am I to do? Here's a perplexing situation. I had representatives of the Miami Daily News, the DeLand Sun, the Daytona Beach Morning Journal, television station WESH, WMFJ, Daytona Beach, all of them convened at a table like this, sitting there. There must have been maybe 15 people. They were speaking with Cimitrolli. They were taking their notes. They were asking their questions. Cimitrolli outlined the complete November program to them. This was August. A girl from the television station said, could you project yourself in this trance thing in front of the television camera? Cimitrolli told her very plainly, why not wait until mid-November when we will be in the sky and everything will be fine, and then it will make a much better program. Those people wrote tongue-in-the-cheek articles, every one of them, I have a copy of each one of them, describing her voice, saying how ridiculously phony it all was. November 10th.
Well, Bob, did it ever occur to you that when someone hears the voice of an alleged Venusian through a trance medium, there might be a certain amount of lack of belief attached to it? I mean, there might be considerably more belief attached to a substantial Venusian who just, you know, sits down in front of you and starts talking to you.
As far as the Venusian's concerned, that's what they are doing.
That's what they are doing.
They can...
There are... No. There's a difference between someone who is actually a Venusian and can prove he's a Venusian, and he says, there is my Ventler, this is how I came, and this is how we live in Venus, I am so-and-so, and all the rest of it, and hearing a voice through a trance medium. I mean, now look, there's one fact we have to face. There are a certain number of people in this world who don't believe in trance mediums.
Well... Won't they take the time?
And there are a certain number of trance mediums who... There are a certain number of trance mediums who are not, shall we say, authentic. I mean, trance mediums is, to me, not the most direct way of proving someone's existence.
But merely because I know nothing about cowboys and people that watch westerns all day long know a whole great deal about it. They have learned their subject. I don't know the subject.
You know, that's not an error in logic on your part. That's a semantic trick, and you know it.
It is not. I've devoted a year to trying to disprove this thing and got so wound up
you're
in it
to
disprove
cowboys. You bring in cowboys. Now look, I am.
They have.
I have the greatest respect for you. That is not an error on logic on your part. That's a semantic trick, and it's not worth it.
It's merely spending their time the way I've spent mine in two different directions.
Well, look, I can
Benjamin,
watch out, the cowboys are coming. We're going to wrap it up. I think we'll fold up the tent, send the squads back to the reservation. The cowboys will be coming in just a moment. The first cowboy we'll be listening to is Harry Carlson. He'll be coming in on horseback. And at 6 a.m., John B. Gambling. We've been talking this morning with Bob Ewing, E-W-I-N-G. If you care to contact Bob, you're more than welcome to do so by sending a card or a letter to Bob Ewing, E-W-I-N-G, care of Long John Station, W-O-R, New York 18. Ellery and Lillian Lanier have been with us, Ben Iskowitz. We've also had, as our engineers, Russell Tinklepaw and Al Nielsen. Sam Vandiver, the photographer, has been around here for a while. Bob Mantler. And, let me see. Who else? That's about it, right?
We had the communications officer of Satellite 2. What was his name?
Kirat. Yeah, Kirat. He was here, too. Neighbors, that wraps it up. I've had it. A very, very happy Memorial Day to you, and I hope you'll be back with us again tonight at midnight. If you're getting up now, I hope you have a very, very happy day. If you're going to get out on the highway, take it easy. Please do. And if you're going to bed now, get a good night's sleep. It's real good. Bless you.